All right, gang, welcome back to another episode of the T-Bone Speaks podcast. And this week I have Dr. Heath Brantley from Wendell, North Carolina, here visiting the studio. He didn't realize he was going to get you on the podcast today, so I dragged him down here. And I think you're going to love today's interview. We're going to talk about how Heath has built a successful practice as a 2013 graduate, some of the successes, struggles, and different technologies that he's using in his practice. So make sure you stay tuned for this week's episode.
Welcome to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal, where our goal is to change the way you practice dentistry by helping you achieve clinical, financial, and personal balance. Now, here's your host, T-Bone.
All right, Heath, how are you doing today, bud?
Pretty good, man.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. I like the new hairdo.
Thanks. I work hard every morning.
You've had this, what, a year and a half now, the hairdo?
It's working.
I know, I notice that. I say something every time you come in, because before you had the much more dorky haircut.
Yes.
You know, like what my kids have.
You know, dental school, you're busy. So you don't have time to fix your hair.
Hey, were you married in dental school?
Mm-hmm. First year.
What was that like?
It was tough on my wife.
Not on you?
No. I mean, I just put my nose to the ground, so I was going to study hard or work hard or whatever. But my wife, she didn't see me much the first 3 to 4 years.
That's good. That's a good way to build a relationship.
Yeah. Don't well, it's only better now than it was in dental school.
Well, maybe it's not better because she actually sees you now.
True.
So let's talk. Who is Heath Brantley? Tell me, give me your story.
So, like you said, I graduated dental school 2013 from this area originally. So I grew up in Wendell, went to school with NC State, Carolina, graduated 2013, moved back home to Wendell, Zebulon area. And I worked as an associate, and I worked doing some temp work for about 2 years. And then I bought a practice 3 years ago.
Did you always know that you wanted to be an owner?
Absolutely.
Did you know that you wanted to buy a practice and be by yourself? Or did you have intentions or hopes of buying into a partnership?
So out of school, in school they tell you can't own a practice. Mm-hmm. Like you need to go work and just, I don't know what you're going to do during those years, but they tell you can't own a practice. So
why? Because it literally it's illegal.
You're not ready. Yeah. Like I had a removable professor straight up say you're not going to be ready to own a practice.
Maybe they just said that to you and not to everybody.
No,
else.
They said everybody. Yeah. And I don't know why that is, but it was very discouraging. That even go as far as saying you have to do an AGD or you're not worth hiring and stuff like that. And I just didn't believe that to be true. But they did convince me that I had to associate first.
Okay. Which is probably good, by the way.
Yeah. I'm not mad about it or anything, but looking back, I mean, I think an associateship was right for the first year or two. I always thought that I would partner in, or you know, had the dream that I would work as an associate, partner in a year or two, eventually be full owner 5 or 10 years down the road. Didn't work out that way for me, but that's okay.
Why didn't it work out that way, you think?
I'm not 100% sure why it didn't work. I do think that I was making a positive impact on the practice, but maybe for philosophical reasons or whatever, the owner dentist was not ready, in my opinion, to let me partner in.
Which were you okay. ready?
I was absolutely ready. I had my spreadsheets and everything ready. I was.
But there's a difference in being mentally ready and believing we're ready and looking back and saying, maybe I really wasn't ready.
Right. Well, I think looking back, I'm glad it didn't work out for several reasons. Probably the chief among them, though, is that if I partnered into someone else's practice that was not 100% on board with what I wanted to do, that would be a pretty tough marriage for a couple of years.
Right. Or forever.
Or forever, maybe. And when the way it worked out for me, when I bought and got 100% ownership, I could change it, make it the way I want it, and then if I do have an associate in the future, they're kind of buying into my philosophy as opposed to the other.
All right, so let's talk about this. So you're an associate at quite honestly a pretty nice practice here in the area. Did you start looking to buy a practice while you were there, or did you start looking to buy a practice when you realized that wasn't going to work out the way you wanted
yes.
it to?
Second.
The second. So when you realized it wasn't going to work out. Mm-hmm. And what was that process like? I mean, were you stuck on going back to where you came from, or did that just happen to, you know, coincidentally happen?
So there didn't appear to be a lot of opportunity in my hometown. Okay. And so I...
In Wendell. So I'm sorry to interrupt.
Sure.
But I'm actually not, but...
I know.
Describe Wendell.
Wendell's a small town, about 5,000-6,000 people in the city limits.
Okay. That makes it sound like where I grew up, but I wouldn't consider Wendell anything like where I grew up.
Right.
I grew up in Rockingham, you know, 5,000-7,000 people.
Yeah.
But I would say Wendell's really only 5,000-6,000 people?
Yeah. I mean, it's a very rural area, so you may have other people who claim to live in Wendell, but they live 10-15 miles out.
Outside of Wendell.
Right.
But Wendell, I think the big advantage of it is it's 30 minutes max.
From
Raleigh, so you're really a suburb to a certain degree.
Right. Yeah, I consider myself, when I meet people out of state and they ask me, I say I'm a suburb of Raleigh.
Okay.
Just to keep it simple.
So Wendell is a small town, but doesn't have that true, like, rural small town, like in the middle of nowhere type of atmosphere.
Right.
Okay.
Right. That's fair.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. All right. All right. So so back to the story about why Wendell.
So when I first got out, there didn't appear to be opportunity, as in you look on an ad listing and there's no ads for practices on the market.
Right.
And so the only places that there appeared to be Raleigh. So, you know, looking at the local resources, NCDS and Patterson Reps and other brokers, they all told me that the practices were in Raleigh, Durham, Cary, like that. So I started looking at different practices, getting their P&Ls and trying to make something out of nothing. I was, even early on when I didn't know what a good practice looked like, I was trying to make something.
You're trying to imagine it.
Right, imagine it. And in retrospect, it would have been a whole lot of work. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work no matter what, but it had been a whole lot of work with, like, not a lot of reward.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Sure.
So looking back, I've never bought a practice, so I've never evaluated a practice in that perspective. What makes some of those practices that you were looking at retrospectively not as good as what you bought? I mean, what are so somebody listening that was in your shoes, 1, 2, 3 years into associateship, looking to buy, even partner in, what are some of the characteristics that you would tell them to look for?
So I guess the first thing would be density of the dentist around. So a lot of the places for sale, for whatever reason, there's a lot of dentists right around you.
So like in Raleigh, basically,
right.
Like 1 per 1,000 people.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, I even remember looking at one opportunity, it was 3 or 4 dentists in the same building, and I was convinced I could make it work, right? This other group had owned it for maybe a year or two.
And it didn't work for
and
them.
And I don't think it was working, I don't know for sure, but why are they leaving, kind of thing? Yeah. And they had other practices, so.
So density is one thing that
right,
you look
density
for.
Was huge. It was kind of hard. I wanted to be near where I practiced, so that's what made Raleigh.
So you wanted to live, when you say near, you wanted to live somewhat near.
Right.
And you wanted to live in Wendell?
I was already in Zebulon.
Okay.
So I was already living
that way.
10 minutes away from Wendell. And so Raleigh was 35 minutes, 40 minutes for me. But ultimately, I wanted to live near.
Okay.
And I was willing to drive 30, 40 minutes because people do that every day and it's not too far.
Yeah.
But I thought maybe I'll move to Raleigh one day after the practice is established.
Okay.
You know, I already have my house set up, so I'm going to stay there 5-10 years. And then maybe I'll move back to Raleigh, kind of thing. But I just never could find a practice that really fit the mold. I found some I wanted to make work, but my wife would...
What was the mold?
I don't know. That's the thing. When you're looking initially, you don't necessarily know.
Looking back, what would you say is the mold?
So, patient-based numbers,
okay.
Really. That was probably the only thing.
So by patient-based numbers, you mean how many active patients, how thriving is the hygiene department,
right.
You know, in terms of the number of recalls and things like that.
Right. But even those numbers, I wasn't really as into at that time. So 3 years ago, I mean, I was very green. I didn't know what those percentages should be. I just kind of knew I need 2,000 patients. So if the practice doesn't have that, you know, I'm going to be building a practice.
2,000 patients, a lot.
Right, but again,
that's a lot.
I know
of
it's
patients.
A lot, but that's what I was going on. So I was trying to. That was the
2,000 active patients.
Right,
is a lot.
I know that now. I know that now, but back, I just kind of always heard that number thrown out there, and so that was one of the main criteria I was looking for. So if it was a really small practice, I didn't think I could build something out of nothing in Raleigh. Just I could, but it'd be very slow.
It'd be harder.
Yes.
No question, it'd be harder.
Yeah, it'd be very slow, and I couldn't. I just didn't want to do that. But then also on the flip side, if it was a big practice or some bigger practices, I thought were outside my range of abilities, both service wise and just economically getting a loan and all of that. But so I avoided those practices too.
What was your practice like that you bought?
small. It was a
very, like, small physically?
No, it was a big building.
Okay.
So the doctor that I bought it from, he had previously renovated it to about a 4,200 square foot building.
Oh, wow.
Of which maybe 2,200 square feet were operatories.
Okay.
So he had about 9 operatories. He only used probably 3. Meaning one for hygiene, one full-time hygienist, and 2 that he worked out of.
And were you able to buy the building?
Yes. So that was part of the deal. The seller wanted to unload the practice.
Okay. And did the seller want to stick around?
They wanted to stick around for at least a minimum of a year.
Okay. And did you allow that?
Yes.
Looking back, were you happy with that?
I think I could have transitioned quicker without the seller.
Okay.
But it's what it took to get the deal done.
Okay.
So I was willing to do it.
Okay. All right. So back to your practice was small in the sense that not physically small, but small in small town.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the good things that maybe you didn't recognize at the time that came with the practice?
So I may have underestimated me moving back to my hometown. That's been
the benefit of that?
Right. That's been very big for me.
Mm-hmm.
Instantly on day one, I probably had 8 new patients a month is what the practice was doing when I got there. And almost on day one, I was probably doing 20 or so, based on just name alone and, you know, elementary school teachers coming to see their young man that grew up and stuff.
Right. So who's made it.
Right. And I mean, and again, that's zero advertising. That's just word of mouth with, local.
Plus, there's probably some percentage of that that's just invigorating the practice with some new energy.
Yeah, I think there's that. And, younger dentists attracts a little buzz around town.
What kind of technology did the practice have when you bought it?
They had a pano.
Okay. Do you consider that technology?
Well, that's what the seller put on their listing as some technology.
What about computers?
They had computers that were on their last leg, so they were about 2,000.
But were they computerized charting?
Yes, computerized.
Computerized scheduling? Backup.
Their scheduling was computerized.
Okay.
Their digital imaging was.
Intraoral sensors.
Right. And what else? Accounting. That was it. They actually still use paper charts for their notes.
Okay. For the, like actual stuff. Okay.
Right.
So no CAD cam, no cone beam, none of that.
He had a red cam in the corner.
Okay. But we wouldn't count that.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So a lot of people are looking to buy practices that have all of these things right away.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't make you afraid?
No.
You think you would, looking back, did you prefer a practice that didn't have those things? Or would you have preferred a practice that kind of had brought those patients along that way?
I prefer move-in ready, I guess. That's always nice. There's a little bit
but
less.
You're paying a premium for that, right?
Right. But all the practices I looked at didn't really have that technology in place for whatever reason.
Okay. Now, talking about the services and procedures that were being done there before you
before
came.
It was a pretty much standard dental office.
Real fill bill?
Yes. Absolutely.
Crown bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Not
a lot of perio either. So just a lot of prophys.
A lot of bloody prophys.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How many team members were there when you walked
three
in?
That three worked for him.
And how many of those people are left now?
Two.
Two. Wow, that's better than I expected.
Right.
All right. What was your number one challenge in buying this practice, looking back, to get where you're at now?
I think big vision, was helpful because anytime you're going through a new deal, especially your first practice you buy or first practice you sell for that matter, it's easy to get bogged down in the details. And so that's where having an advisor to keep you level headed about what's a big deal.
What does an advisor mean to you?
A CPA
okay.
and an attorney primarily
okay.
at that stage in the game.
Okay. You're talking about at this time of sale
mm-hmm.
perspective.
Yeah,
okay.
But even your banker too. I mean, if you've got a good enough relationship with your banker.
You work with a banker that happened to know dentistry too. So
right, right.
That helped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you bought the practice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're comfortable sharing numbers. What kind
sure.
of, what was it doing revenue-wise at the time?
Sure.
Where are we at now? 1x that, 2x that.
So I'm going to specific numbers, but I'm about 3.5x.
3.5x.
In 3.
In 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
What made that happen?
Energy level.
Okay.
I did expand days, so I worked 1 extra day.
So they were open Monday, Tuesday?
Wednesday, Thursday.
So they opened 4 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're open 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm. So that
okay.
was part of it. Expanding services. So there's a lot of stuff that.
Like, be more specific with me.
So again, fillings and crowns, that's
okay.
primarily. If it was filling or crown, he was comfortable doing that.
Okay.
some of the more complicated surgeries, difficult extractions, root canals. He was
when you say surgeries, I'm thinking like, you know, right. bone grafting.
Right.
You're talking when you say surgery, you're literally right. talking about taking out teeth.
Right. Right. And so he would do simple ones, but he was 65, I believe. So he was at a point in his career due to whatever reason, he was referring a lot of the stuff he used to do as a younger dentist.
And you were able to keep most of that, if not all of it, in-house?
Primarily.
Okay, yeah. What about endo?
I do almost all of it.
But he was referring that out?
Mm-hmm. Maybe okay. he'd do a single anterior every now and then, but that's okay. it.
Wow. Perio, how'd you grow your perio program?
Education.
Well, you had nowhere to go but up.
Well, yeah, right. When you start at 10% of your days, you just go up. So education and just kind of refusing to treat patients substandard.
Was that hard?
Initially, yes, but now it's easy.
You have patients give you pushback on
yes.
some of these things?
Yeah, and whenever you say no to someone, a lot of times they get mad at you, right?
Is it easier to say no now than it was then?
Yes.
Did you say no less then? Did you stick to your guns?
For the most part, I stuck to my guns. Okay. I mean, I give in every now and then because I don't want to deal with it. But
I'm talking about when you first started.
The first 3 months is probably a good way to describe it. I really kept everything status quo. I wanted no bumps in the road.
Right.
I did a lot of things. I didn't want to make the seller mad. Not that it mattered.
Because he was there.
Right, because he's there and I'm trying to maintain goodwill. I didn't want to make the employees leave. So the first 3 months,
he was just scared.
Status quo. Right, yeah. I didn't want to lose patients.
Paid for that. You didn't want to raise them.
Exactly. So that's kind of where I was at. But after that, I started beginning, what do I want to promote in the office? And is it substandard? You know, hygiene department, or do I want to have one that meets the standards? So then we just started saying no to, you know, we just can't do that. I'm sorry, Miss Jones, but we just can't. We're not helping you. Like I told them, I tell some patients, I don't even feel comfortable taking your money to treat, you know, to prophy your teeth because you actually have a much more severe condition, and I'm just not comfortable taking money to not help you. That's kind of what I told them.
And what was their response to it? Like, I'm going to go somewhere else?
A lot of times they actually do it. Like, okay. That's what's kind of surprising. When you kind of get on their level and you show a lot of concern, you wheel around to the front and say, look, Ms. Jones, I know you've been having
some
teeth.
So you need me, I die.
Yes.
Like we are today.
Right, exactly. And that communicates the message that this is important. I've had one lady, she said that you were trying to take advantage of an old woman. Like, she said that, but she's one of my best patients today. Yeah.
I want to emphasize what you just said. I think it's important. You said when you wheel around, and I added the knee to knee, eye to eye part.
Right.
I think one of the most important things that we learned, that I've learned, or that you've learned, is to talk to patients on their own level, literally, like physically on their own level, conversationally on their own level, word-wise, and then be able to look them in the eye. And too many times dentists, and I'm guilty of it sometimes, I'm sure you are too, we talk with our mask on, we talk while we have this, you know, this stuff in the mouth, and we're behind them in the 11 o'clock position,
right.
And then we wonder why people don't connect with us or don't accept our treatments.
Right.
So there's a significant value in that.
And I even start the procedure that way too. Yeah. I got kind of aware of this when I walk into the room and sometimes the patient be laid back and I'm just coming up from the 11 o'clock position, they almost
like sneak attack.
And I talk to them before we lay them back. Yeah. Hey, how's it going? You have any questions?
This is what we're going to be doing today. Right.
Yep.
Yeah, I call it inform before you perform.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, just a debrief.
Yep.
Hey, Heath, today we got you here. We're doing a crown on the upper right hand side. We're going to be getting you numb. You're going to be here about an hour and a half. Is this what you expect today?
Yes.
Oh no, I thought this was a quick visit. I've got a toothache down here. And that way you know kind of what's going on.
And
it's a little deeper.
Yep, and that keeps you from making mistakes, right?
Absolutely. So, all right, let's go into technology now.
Okay. Great.
Were you afraid when you borrowed the money? I don't want to use the word afraid. That's not, you know what I mean. Were you, like, look, you bought a practice that essentially had nothing, okay? I'm assuming you had nothing at the time, okay?
Yeah.
So you took out loans. You probably borrowed more than you thought you could borrow, and now you're talking about adding technology that has six figures attached to each of those technologies. How did you think about that?
So I'm very fortunate. The first practice I landed in already made those investments for me. So I got to cut my
teeth. As an associate?
Yes, as an associate. So I got to cut my teeth on the technology.
Well, they spoiled you that you needed to have a booth.
Yeah. Right, because not a lot of offices in our area had the cone beam and the CEREC.
Right.
And I just walked into it. So I got to not have the stress of making a payment every month. I just learned to use it. And so for 18 months, I had both of those at my disposal.
So what was it like going to a practice that didn't have this?
It was awful, man. I couldn't take an impression.
You mean making temporaries and
yes,
taking impressions?
First of all, I didn't really know how to take an impression, like an analog impression. I really had to walk through it and do it several times to even remember, because for 18 months, I pretty much had never taken an impression. Like right out of dental school, I could probably count the number of impressions on one hand that I did in my first 2 years.
That's amazing.
Right. So, I mean, I just walked into that. Again, that's not me. That's just being fortunate to land in a CEREC practice or any
CAD-CAM
practice.
Right. And what about cone beam?
Same thing. I had that luxury almost on day one. It was installed. So
were you doing implants without the cone beam when you got there?
No, I wasn't doing any implants when I landed. You know, I did CE, actually took one of your courses.
So I'm talking about when you bought your practice.
No cone beam. I had the panel, remember?
No, I get that. But what I'm saying is from the time you bought it, till the time you got your cone beam, were you doing implants in that time between?
No.
Even though you had gotten education from people like myself, other people, you had been exposed to all of that, you had done it. Was it a conscious thing that I can't do this until I have this technology?
Right. I can't do it because my workflow is disrupted.
Okay. So you bought this practice knowing that you're going to buy these things.
Yes.
Did you have a timeline in your head of how long?
2 years.
Okay. How long did it take you?
6 months. And I bought the CEREC and the 3D.
At the same time?
Same time.
$250,000.
Yeah. Just went through CEREC Accept just to learn about it, right?
Of course. Well, you know, you knew good and well what you were going there for.
Yeah. But I went with the intention, I'm just going to get the Blue Cam.
Right.
Even though the Omni was been out for a long time. I was going to save money.
Yeah.
But that was stupid. So I just got the Omni and the 3D and why not?
Did you go intending to buy both?
No. They just happened to have that there.
Okay. And looking back, that was a good decision?
Yeah. Well, I didn't do any implants that first 6 months in my new practice, even though I'd done them
before. Right.
But then as soon as I got it again, then I started doing more implants.
What do you say to people that say my area, my small town practice doesn't have these types of procedures?
I think it's foolish.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you're saying this is a small town practice.
Yeah. I think we make a lot of assumptions as dentists without actually talking to people.
Without giving them the choice.
Right. We take the choice away from them.
You know, I have this belief that our case acceptance rate should really only be around 10 to 15%.
Mm-hmm.
And people laugh at me when I say that. And I say that is if it's much higher than that, either you're an anomaly, okay, or you're not giving your patients the chance to say yes to the best.
Right.
And when you give your patients, when you follow the yes to the best philosophy, if you get a 10 to 15% case acceptance, you're going to be unbelievably busy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And what I've also found is that patients, they may not say it with their lips, but they say not yet.
Right.
And so these patients come back a year, 2 years later with the estimate you gave them. And I tend to honor it, to be honest with you.
Of course. And as you should.
Right. I mean, even though technically it says this is valid for 6 months, but that's not the point. This person at home has saved their money for 2 years. And they remembered what you told them.
That's called goodwill.
Right. Yeah. So those people, I don't blow them out of the water with fees or make them think that they're less than or anything like that. I just say, when you're ready, come back.
Yeah.
We'll be here.
You know, I want to make that as another point of emphasis. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you learned this, but to me it all sounds like common sense. But I was first exposed to this kind of concept from Paul Hamilly.
Mm-hmm.
And he called it about giving people hope.
Mm-hmm.
Letting people know, hey, Heath, I know we've talked to you about a lot today. What I want to make sure is that we continue to see you every 6 months, regardless of what you decide on these things we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And we're here when you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
We'll wait with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, letting people know that it's okay to say no right now, that it's not like you have to do it now or you're out.
Right.
Giving them the hope and keeping them coming back. And that's about planting seeds.
Mm-hmm.
When you plant seeds, that harvest comes back, sometimes right away, sometimes 6 months from now, sometimes 18 months from now. We've had patients that come back with marketing materials that we sent 10 years ago, and they're like, well, I ran through my drawer, I found it, now's the time.
Or it's been sitting on the fridge for 10 years, which is even weirder.
Which is even crazier, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, so what has CAD-CAM CIRIC in your situation? What has Cone Beam, Sirota Cone Beam in your situation? What has that meant for your practice? Is that where your growth has come from?
Yes, I think it drives everything. So when I make purchasing decisions in general, is does it make the patient experience better as a general rule? Because if it does, it'll pay for itself down the road because patients will come to me because it's more convenient. And does it make my life more efficient and better?
Right.
And if it answers those two questions, then it's a no-brainer. Yeah. And so, you know, I wrestle with decisions that don't satisfy both of those things. But if it satisfies both, which I already knew the CIRIC and 3D would, then I just jump on it.
Okay.
Like, it didn't take a lot of convincing.
Awesome. And then you made a purchase that I don't want to say I don't agree with, but you made a purchase that I'm skeptical about.
Sure.
Maybe because of past experiences, but it sounds like it's been phenomenal for you.
Yes.
And that's been the hard tissue laser.
Yeah.
So you bought a Solea laser.
Yes.
I don't know exactly what it's called.
That's
it's just
right.
A Solea.
Right.
And they don't have like a model name or anything. It's just called a Solea.
Mm-hmm. So okay. Convergent Dental is the parent company.
Okay. So
Solea
okay.
is the product.
I got you. Okay. Convergent Dental, Solea. Tell me about that.
So again, it fits in the same vein that CIRIC and 3D did.
And we're talking about the same dollar point too. It's
yes.
six figures.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's basically what it was.
Would you hesitate to buy that?
No.
Why not?
No. So I went to an intro meeting where
at my place actually.
Yeah, at your place actually. So our rep Chuck invited me. He actually said, "I'm not going to tell you what it is. I just want you to be there and learn about it."
Okay.
Which sounds really sketchy.
Well, that's typical Chuck.
Right. And so I showed up, and he. Had the manufacturer rep pitch me on it, and you know, I said, if this thing is half as good as it's supposed to be, it fits both those things. It makes my life easier because I don't have to give patients shocks nearly as often, and it also makes things better for my patient and more convenient. Now they don't have a swollen lip for 3 hours.
They don't have a swollen lip. They have a feeling of a swollen lip.
Right.
Come on.
But they call it a swollen lip.
I got you. I had a patient today ask me if I could freeze her. He was Canadian.
Nice.
So,
I wouldn't know how to.
What has the laser meant for your practice?
It's huge. So I would say since we bought the laser, we're up 60%.
Wow. You think it's all because of the laser?
I think it's a lot of things. I think there's a lot of things coming to fruition just with various practice purchases, philosophy, and
timing.
All that timing. But a lot of it's just add-on procedures at the end of hygiene.
Okay.
It's a very easy sell, if you will, to a patient that, hey, this filling will not require anesthetic in
while you're here,
10 minutes.
Done.
And they almost always say yes, because the number two reasons that they wouldn't do that in the past was, one, I don't want to have a shot and go back to work,
right.
Which is understandable.
That's part
or
of
two,
the
is money. But, you know, filling is $30, $40 copay, so money's not really the issue. So the thing keeping them out of the chair.
Money's not the issue. It's usually the excuse that we use or they use.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when we found the real reason,
right.
which was giving them a shot, and they had to get back to work after lunch, that you know they always say yes. And I did add soft tissue too, so that adds some revenue. You
sure.
know, I'm doing some of that in the practice, whereas before I didn't do it because it was a little too messy.
I got you.
It's hard to convince a patient in hygiene to cut a fibroma.
So you're telling me this thing really cuts teeth without anesthetic?
Yes.
And I trust you.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
So the one caveat that I've given out is that there are some patients that are hard to work on.
Yeah, they're busy stereotype patients.
But if you get rid of those 10% of people who can't tolerate the Cavitron on their teeth without being numb, so if you exclude them, the other 90% of your patients, I'm at a probably 99% success rate. And what I define success is I got through the appointment without anesthetic.
Okay. And your patient happy.
And the patient is happy.
Not saying I'm never doing that again.
Right. I always ask them, I did this a lot the first 3 to 4 months as I was learning to trust the technology. But I always ask them, 1 out of 10, 1 to 3 being cold symptoms when I put on the tooth, 4 to 6 being uncomfortable, 7 to 10 being pain. I still haven't had a 7 or 7 out of 10.
Okay.
It's always a little uncomfortable at some point maybe. But most of the time it's under 3, which means I had cold sensitivity during the appointment.
Did you come out of school with debt?
Yes.
A decent amount of debt?
About $200,000.
$200,000. So that's less than a lot of people, but that's still a lot of money.
Good state school, which is reasonably cheap.
Yeah. Okay. And then you borrowed money to buy your practice.
Yeah.
I'm assuming your parents didn't give you money.
Nope.
you borrowed money to invest in technology.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about CE now.
Okay.
Talk to me about what have you done CE. Did you come out of school thinking you knew everything?
No.
No.
I came out of school thinking I'd never place an implant because they told us we couldn't.
Hell, they told you couldn't own a practice, much less place an implant.
Exactly. Right. Okay. So, yeah, so I didn't think I could do, I thought I could do the basics very well. I thought UNC and probably other dental schools, they train you to do the basics extremely well. Okay. But you don't have any repetition, which means to get really good at those procedures, you have to do them multiple times. Right. So, yeah, but as far as breadth of procedures, I didn't feel like, you know, I had a lot to learn.
So you didn't come out being surgically oriented?
I could take out almost any tooth that you threw at me. Okay. I might not do horizontal thirds and things like that right off the bat, but as I learned to do surgery better, I started doing those now.
All right, gang, we didn't intend to do this, but our conversation with Heath has warranted a second episode, part two, and be sure to tune in next Tuesday for part two of our interview with Dr. Heath Brantley from Wendell, North Carolina.
Thanks so much for listening to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Remember to keep striving for excellence, and we'll catch you on the next episode.